This program is brought to you by the makers of Popsicle, Fudgicle, and Creamsicle, those delicious frozen confections on a stick. Now I have a swell surprise for you. The famous winner of the typical American boy contest has now become Popsicle Pete. And here's a message from him.
Hello, everybody. I sure am glad to meet you. And boy, am I glad I was picked to be the typical American boy. Because now I'm Popsicle Pete. I always wanted to be on the radio, and now I have a chance to tell you about some wonderful presents you can get free. See, you ought to see them. Hundreds of them. You get them just for saving bags from Nifty Popsicle, Fudgicle, and Creamsicle. Some gifts, even better than Christmas. You can get a wristwatch, a movie camera, table tennis, a wallet, a doll. Gee, lots of gifts. Just save the bags from Popsicle, Creamsicle, and Fudgicle on a handy stick. Boy, do they taste good.
Wholesome, too, and nourishing. Made fresh every day of the finest ingredients. The biggest 5 cents worth anywhere.
And say, kids, get the free illustrated Popsicle gift list at your ice cream store. A free coupon comes with it, worth 10 bags.
There, now we're recording.
Sweet! How do I sound?
Yeah, perfect.
The trail is treating me well. I'm eating enough. And there's lots and lots of water.
So you said today on Facebook that you called it like a zero day?
Yeah.
So explain to us non-hikers what the lingo means.
A zero day is where you're doing 0 miles. You're usually in town, although some people will actually take a zero day on trail. They'll just camp somewhere.
Right.
It's basically a rest day.
Cool.
And I had to actually take a few because my knee's a little gimpy. I'm a little worried, be honest with you. I've done about 650 miles so far, and the trail is like, 2,175. I'm a little behind on the pace needed, to get done by, mid-October. I'm resting the knee. I'm starting to do some stretches, which I think can actually help the knee as well. And then also I just started drinking some protein powder, which I think will help the muscles around the knee strengthen up. And hopefully it'll be fine. It wasn't that it was horrible when I was out there, but it was just, half the time it's just kind of, especially the uphill and the downhill, which there's a lot of on the AT.
Yeah.
So it's, and most hikers get something like this. I mean, it's rare where you hear of a hiker doing a whole through hike and there's no, some sort of constant pain.
So you're about a third of the way through.
Roughly.
Yeah. Speaking.
Yeah. Closer to 30%. Yeah.
Right. So almost a third of the way through 650 miles. How long?
Yeah.
So how long has it taken you to get 650 miles?
Well, I started March 21st. But remember, I went home for 8 days back to LA because I wanted to attend the Pacific Crest Trail kickoff. And I've taken a few more 0 days than in retrospect I should have. But, I'm a social person, damn it. I can't spend all my time out there frolicking with the turtles and the...
No, there are no turtles for you.
I know.
What I've read from your so everyone knows, I'm following your updates on the Facebook, and you were complaining earlier that you have not seen any turtles.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And like literally every hiker I've talked to, somebody mentioned they'd seen a turtle. I go, oh, that'd be cool. I guess they're box turtles. And I still haven't seen a fucking turtle yet. And I keep asking people, oh yeah, I saw 5 of them. Oh, there's one just right down there. You probably see him. He's probably waiting there. He was playing cards with a fox. I go down there, of course, there's nothing. There's a deck of cards, sure.
And a fox, but no
and a
turtle.
Fox.
And a cloud of dust.
And a cloud of dust.
And the turtle took off.
Because I'm just thinking, turtle footage is just great because they're not going to run away.
No,
well, they may think they are, but you can just stop them. You can do retakes and all that.
You could pick him up and move him around.
Move him around, put him on his back if he starts,
give him a lip. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful that, apparently I'm in a hot turtle area, but they've, apparently know I'm coming and,
they can smell fear.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they don't like people with gimpy knees.
Maybe
something.
They don't.
Yeah. And maybe it's the odd rhythm of my actual gait.
It scares them. Yeah.
I don't know, George.
You know, they're terrified of peg-leg pirates. Maybe they think you're a peg-leg going over the hill.
See, so I don't know. It could become a main theme of the film.
How is the film going? Because that is, I mean, you're not just doing this because you want to. You're doing this because you're making another hiking movie, right?
Well, my feeling is that the footage is good. The only negative, and it's, if anything, it's a potentially good negative, if that makes any sense.
No.
Not at all.
I'm not going to
talk it up. Let's put it under the realm of paradoxically so.
Okay.
Is that I shot more footage than I thought I would have by this point.
Oh.
When I did the Pacific Crest Trail films, they averaged about 40 hours total footage that I then winnowed down to about, you know, on average about 80 minutes. Well, I've already shot 19 hours, and, you know, that's roughly half of that, and I'm not even a third of the way done of the trail yet. So I think that will slow down because you'll have less and less hikers as the year goes on. If this knee thing gets worse, I mean, I'm doing the film regardless. I mean, if it gets to the point, I always said that if I got hurt and I couldn't go on, I would just, because I have my car out here, I would just drive up and down and then try to intercept the what I would consider to be the more interesting people and stories on the trail and go from there. So,
and then you could just say you hiked the whole trail, because who's going to know? Who's going to know?
I would know.
First of all, well, we're talking about it here, but nobody listens to this, so you're safe.
Yeah.
Secondly, you know, what? Creative license is what I would call that.
Well, yeah, that'd also be called, be known as lying.
Well, okay, if you want to be technical.
Right. So what happened? I was there, you know, I was going to be on the show, and what happened? I was there at 12:30 waiting for your call. Was there a mix up in the call times or something? Because I had my phone up.
I think that we were both dealing with, we were both in bad cell phone places. So you were calling me to tell me you're available. My phone wasn't ringing. I'd call you back and it would go to your voicemail and whatever. Okay. It was, you know, kismet. It wasn't meant to be. So I figured since you've got the 0 day, you're sitting on your butt anyway, now's a good chance to just sort of catch up with Scott. We have a Scott sighting. No turtles, but we have Scott. So I know that you've got a story you heard on the trail from somebody.
Yeah, this was pretty cool. This was probably about a month ago, and I was in the southern part of the Smokies in Tennessee, and I just got into one of the shelters. And for those of you in podcast land who don't know about the AT, on average, there's about a shelter every 8 miles or so that people stay in. Why, I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing because there's like, it, you know, you, let's see. I could sleep on the soft ground or on hardwood. Give me the hardwood. I could have mice running around my face in the hardwood. Okay, yeah, give me that. And I've got a snorkestra all around me with, you know, 9 people, you know. You know, so I don't know. But I guess, but it rains and your tent's all wet. And it's like, anyway. They're big. People like them. I guess it gives it psychologically. It makes them
sure.
Good. Anyway, so I get to one of these shelters and somebody had a fire going and I was introducing myself and my trail name is Squatch.
All right.
And this one guy, kind of seriously, he goes, why do you have that name? Did something happen to you? I mean, really serious. You know, usually people, you know,
they laugh,
or joke around. Why Squatch? But by the way, apparently out here, the word Squatch doesn't hit the ear the same as out on the West Coast, where I think it's more, it's very interesting because my dentures are loosening up or something because I'll literally 80% of the time I go, I'm Squatch. Squash? Is that it? No, Squatch.
Well, they probably, I'm hypothesizing, but Sasquatch is probably not a word that they're using quite a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. But it's amazing how in the West, it just seems to be understood a lot quicker. Sure. I wouldn't have thought that gap would have been so pronounced as it apparently is, but
I wonder if you could like do, you know, that like that Coke versus soda versus pop map, you know, I wonder if there's a similar thing for words about Bigfoot. I wonder if like it's one word in the South. Maybe they use Bigfoot more often than Sasquatch. Sasquatch does seem to me to be sort of a
northwest
Canadian kind of deal. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm just
No. It's okay. You know, Wooly Booger is a name out, you know, in Tennessee or somewhere.
Maybe you should go by the name Booger when you're in the East.
Yeah. Well, it would fit on a lot of the times while I'm double knuckling my right nostril. Get a lot of bugs on the trail. Anywho.
Do you? All right. Good to know.
Yeah. So I say, my name is Squatch. That goes, why do you have that? Did something happen? He goes, well, I said, I'm really into Bigfoot. And yes, about 19 years ago in Northern California, something strange did happen to me. And he stops and he's like looking at me, and you can tell, or I thought it would, he's kind of eyeballing me like, am I kidding around, or how serious do I take this subject? He looks at me for a few seconds and then says, I saw one about 10 feet in front of me in 1974.
Wow.
On the Wonderland Trail around Mount Rainier. And he seemed very believable to me. I mean, he was just said it, you know, and he said, so the details, and there aren't a ton of details. He just said he was by himself on the Wonderland Trail, which is supposedly an awesome trail, very tough, a lot of up and down that circumnavigates Mount Rainier.
Okay.
So as you and I know, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners know, is, you know, historically that general area, pretty good load of sightings or purported sightings, right?
Yeah.
And he said he came around a corner and this thing was standing in the trail. Based the way he described it, it didn't sound like it was there staring at him. Like, it's like they both kind of ran into each other. And he said it had this look. They were just looking at each other eye to eye. And he said it had this look that it looked like I just got busted look. Like, oh, shit. You know, like, you know, like when your sister caught you, you know, flamming the yam when you were 13, Brian. I'm sure flamming the yam, stroking the purple-headed soldier.
Gotcha.
And, yeah.
I'm an only child, so I've never had that situation.
Oh, okay. So that explains a lot, by the way. Anywho, he just said, and this thing, after a few seconds, and he described it, by the way, he is completely covered in hair. Not, I think he the arm hair was a little longer than the main body hair. It was dark brown. But he didn't say it was it was tall, he said. He said it was approximately 7 feet tall, but he felt the weight, he put it about 250. It wasn't like super big. And he said very quickly, gracefully, and quietly, it just bounded away like big steps. Hmm. I think he said it pushed off the side of this log like incredibly gracefully. Hmm. And it was gone. And since it was heading in the general direction of where the trail was going, where he would have gone, he fairly quickly, he said, did an about face and headed back in the direction he had come from. Because he didn't obviously, you know, want to keep going.
Dance with that thing. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. And so that was, you know, something like that's either obviously a bald-faced lie or it happened. And he, you know, I don't know. Whatever my opinion is worth to anybody, I thought he was pretty believable. So that was it in regards to
this is interesting because it's like, you know, I remember I met Ben Radford once, you know, Ben Radford, the famous skeptic.
Yeah.
I met him in Pocatello and I asked him something along the lines of like, well, you know, and he's telling me why he thinks Bigfoot is bullshit. And I'm asking him, so, well, what about all the witnesses? I mean, he's like, well, they're all wrong. You know, I'm paraphrasing. It's been several years. I don't remember exactly what he said, but he kind of dismissed like every witness sighting, right?
Yeah.
Every single one. And you have someone like this, right? I mean, this guy, he wasn't, I mean, from, I'm guessing, you tell me if I'm misinterpreting this. He didn't sound boastful, right? He just, he had this thing. He brought it up when he, after he found out
name.
About, yeah, right, your name, and you had some sort of an event. So he felt that he could talk to you about it. He didn't make up some crazy ass story.
No.
It's standing on the trail. It walked away. I mean, it didn't get back in the spaceship or anything, right?
Yeah, it didn't, you know, well, we've talked about this on the show before. Well, you know, usually stories that have all the earmarks, I think, tend to be less credible. I smelt something. Then I saw a print.
Yeah.
Then I heard a crack.
Then it
shat on me, you know.
And then a rock came flying in.
A rock came, exactly. Yeah, yeah, this was just, boom, it was there, looked, gone.
Exactly how you would expect to find any kind of wild animal, a deer or whatever.
Right. And he says he hadn't told a lot of people over the years, hadn't sought out publicity for it, had told some hikers, because this guy was a fairly experienced long hiker, I think, and he had told his family, but that was about it. So I found it compelling. And yeah, that was it. I'm just trying to think of any other Bigfoot. The only other thing is that there were these two great guys. it wasn't a sighting report, but these are two West Virginia coal miners who had section hiked the AT from 2000 to 2008. So now what they've been doing the last 3 years, as a lot of ex-hikers do, they become kind of trail angels. You know, they set up these things along the line where they cook food for the hikers, and all of a sudden, surprise, you know, you turn a corner, and instead of a Bigfoot staring you down, there's like a roast and chicken and donuts. Wow. So this is like the third year these guys have done it, and it's Stumblefoot and Insomniac. And, it's become such a cliche to say these guys should have their own reality show. But literally, these guys should have their own reality show. They were so friggin' funny. And Stumblefoot was so funny because he was just busting my balls about Bigfoot. I told him the story. He actually, about the thing that happened to me in 92, he said, well, I'll tell you what, when that, I believed like 1% before, now I'm up about 2.5%. He moved me at least a little bit. And I was interviewing, not about Bigfoot, but they were just sitting next to each other, and he brought up, he goes, what are you into again, the Sasquatch? The Sasquatch? I go, have you ever heard the old stories about him here? And he goes, well, we used to till we shot and ate them all. Anyway, we used to do this thing. You know, he was just that kind of guy. He was hilarious. So I think that bit will probably end up in the film. It was at least at the time, seemed very funny.
Yeah. So the when Paul and I did the show this past weekend, which, by the way, I'm just going to point out that we did a show 4 months ago, and then we did a show 4 days ago. And so everyone's heads are probably exploding right now when they see this sitting in their download queue. We talked a lot about this new TV show. Obviously, you haven't had a chance to see
it. I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen things. So.
Let me guess, though. Can I just try to guess what goes on in the show?
I thought you might.
Let me guess, Ed. They're responding to something, either a story. There's a lot of dramatic music. They theorize. They go out. There's something allegedly heard or seen. They cut to a commercial. They come back, maybe a brief recap.
No.
And then they ultimately realize it's inconclusive. But damn it, we were so close. Maybe next time. Let's have a beer, Bobo.
You've got the basic structure figured out.
Yeah.
And it's uncanny the way that you've done that. You've deconstructed it without actually seeing an episode. Except they don't really theorize. They sort of jump right to the conclusion that it's Bigfoot, like every single time.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, you know, Matt, it's true. I've read some comments, and I know we've discussed Moneymaker. And, I've known Matt. I mean, we haven't actually talked in years, but, I've known him from way back when he tracked me down about the thing that happened to me in 92. And there always has been that part of Matt. I mean, he's not a Biscardi level bullshitter.
Not quite.
He's a hypester. He likes to he's a lawyer.
Right.
He always likes to put the best possible spin on something. But also coupled with that is that he gets too excited about stuff and thinks that it's probably he works on the assumption that it is a Bigfoot, which is incredibly unscientific. And then never seems to fully rule it out unless there's actually like another animal scene. So as smart a guy as he is, and he is I think he's a very bright guy and he's worked very hard, but this tendency to, which hopefully has gotten better as he's gotten older, to be a real dick to people a lot of the time, disrespectful. And yet this wishful thinking part where if he's out there, investigating, then for some reason that seems to increase the probability that there actually is a Bigfoot out there, I don't know. But so what was your take on the show?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because the whole his assumption is, instead of innocent until proven guilty, he's like guilty until proven innocent. Right. He believes that it's Bigfoot until there's some incontrovertible fact that's presented. And actually, I haven't actually seen that happen. There was and I have missed the last two episodes. I can't believe I haven't seen these, but there was an episode where he was talking to a witness and he ended up not believing the guy just because of the way he described the face. And I mean, I have no idea. That was the one where Matt said they have black noses like dogs. I'm not sure what that means.
And then he'll do that. Like, first of all,
And we know they're – no, he's not seen one.
He thinks and the whole thing about the red eye thing in Ohio, he was never that definite about that years ago, and now suddenly he's all definite that it did happen. you see that with other researchers too, something that they were iffy about. Now suddenly it there's a variety. It gets better with your time. It gets, it's much more certain.
Yeah.
So, overall, on a 1 to 10, the episodes that you have seen, what would you give them?
As a scientific document, they would get a 3, and I'm being really generous. As a entertainment vehicle, I'd probably give them an 8. I mean, they're fun to watch. It's enjoyable. You know, Bobo's great. I really like Cliff. He's probably the guy on the show that I know. I've met Bobo, I think, twice, but I've hung out with Cliff a little bit, and so I like Cliff. This Renee woman, whoever she is, this mysterious Renee that showed up from nowhere, who's, I don't know who she is, but she's totally reasonable and someone you could watch for a while.
And I'm guessing has a good rack.
You know, I'm not going to sit here and rate her specifically, but no, she's not like the hottie from
the gratuitous hottie.
Yeah, she's not the gratuitous hottie. She's
because they have the gratuitous hottie there with Bobo. So you figure out the female side.
Yeah, seriously, all that eye candy and Bobo. anyway, I think it's fun, and I think we're 2 shows away. I think that's a total of 6 shows, and I don't know how many have run. So
it sounds like, based on the the ratings, just what I'm kind of hearing from gists from people, it sounds like they'll probably do more episodes. I'm guessing, because the ratings sound like they were pretty good.
Yeah, well, if they could squeeze out, I mean, how many years did Monster Quest go on?
I don't know.
If they can squeeze out, they should at least do half that as many of finding Bigfoot, though they never actually will find him on the show. I mean, clearly that's not going to happen.
Who actually weighs more now, Bobo or Matt?
You know, I Bobo's a tall dude, man. He is a big guy, so I'm going to have to give it to Bobo. Just because he's probably got a foot and a half on Matt, right? I mean,
Matt's always been a bit kind of a linebacker guy, but he's gotten bigger, fatter.
Of us, I'm not gonna, Matt, when I first met Matt in Willow Creek in 2000, and what was that, 3, the symposium, mm-hmm. and he's got the total linebacker. I think that's a good linebacker lawyer is what he is.
He's the linebacker lawyer, taking hits for science and raking in the cash. Maybe.
Well, and that was the interesting, the point that Paul made on the last show is the main reason why Matt goes for this is because he's selling something with the BFRO. Now, the BFRO is a eco-tourist outfit, so obviously this is great for Matt and for the BFRO and for their business endeavors. But if you're like a serious, quote-unquote serious Bigfoot researcher, probably this kind of show is not what you'd want to end up doing with your spare time.
I'm just amazed how many people, I mean, I guess it's like, it's true in any area of interest. If you're not particularly well read on the subject, which I'm guessing the majority of the people who divvy up money for these quote unquote expeditions are, it just seems so ridiculous that, I mean, because when you look at it, yes, we all basically believe the probability that these things exist is high. But that to go out on one particular expedition and have any kind of encounter, a sighting, a turd throwing, a scream, whatever, is so low. And then how many of these supposedly do happen? It's so pathetically laughable. But people still, they just, oh, no, man.
But so if you imagine that they're doing this, and this is something else we sort of touched on, this sort of like willing suspension of disbelief, right? You're treating this thing like a field trip adventure, kind of a theme park visit, right? You're visiting Bigfoot World and Matt's your guide, right? And so he's going to take you out into Bigfoot World, and you're going to have an encounter with Bigfoot. You may not see him exactly, but you're going to have and people are cool with that. And I don't know. I guess I have a hard time.
I guess if you go out with the attitude that
you're just going out to have a good time, and
and it's not the literal truth. But I don't think that's certainly not how it's advertised.
Oh Lord, no!
And there's zero tongue in cheek.
No,
I mean, not that Matt doesn't have a sense of humor, but the BFRO is anything but a humorous organization. No, I mean, they are promoting this as we're getting close to these things all the time, and blah blah blah, which is from an evidentiary point of view horseshit. I mean, they got very little to back up those claims, and yet they keep claiming it. They hear noises. They do this. People say these. It's just so thin and so yeah, it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like wishful thinking expeditions. You know, I don't know. It just seems,
you know, for me, it's sort of
sad.
Like, it's like professional wrestling at this point, right?
It is, kind of.
You go out there.
You know it's kind of not real. Part of you does.
Exactly.
But you still go with it anyway.
And honestly, if you really thought you were in the woods with a 700-pound, you know, 8-foot-tall, you know, hairy monster, you probably wouldn't be out there, right? But you know, it's a BFRO expedition. We're just going to have a good time. We're going to hear some spooky sounds, and we're all going to go back and tell our friends about the adventure. And no harm, no foul. As long as... You know, no one's gambling away their retirement funds so they can go
right
on a BFRO expedition.
Well, and then the other thing, which would seem to be a justifiable reason for going, is you may go into it thinking, hopefully you would go into thinking that the odds are very low, but that you might be learning techniques.
Yeah.
You know, about the calls or you know, wood knocking.
You could apply in your own free time, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So, I don't know. I guess I'd have to go on one myself.
I would love to go on one. I doubt seriously they'd ever allow.
Oh, of course not.
Either of us to go. I would enjoy it. I would love to see the people. I mean, I want to know more about it, you know?
I want to know where there is one so we can actually scream noises from the other side of the ridge and see how many claim it was definitively a Sasquatch.
Yeah. Well,
that would be good. Yeah. I know that, I think, didn't Todd, and I don't know if Todd Neese did that years ago. I don't know, not in the sense of putting fake screams out, but he wanted to go in and like witness. He's one of the early ones up near, I think, the Skookum Meadow. Hmm. Expeditions, but who knows for God's sakes. So what else have I been missing in the world of Sasquatch since I've been traipsing around in the woods?
Oh, good Lord, I have no idea.
If you say I'm sure a lot of the listeners have the trailer to Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Have you seen that?
I have not seen it. Is it
good? Oh my God, go to my Facebook homepage, scroll down a little bit. It is awesome, and the as I write in the in my little heading to it, I think as I write, hopefully this film will serve as a blueprint on what not to do in case we discover Sasquatch. So basically, this film looks really great. Actually, it's called Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and it shows how the Planet of the Apes became the Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
How? Yeah, because normally, you know, in the original series, it was never discussed what the actual procedure was.
Right.
But this offers the premise, which is really fascinating and seems scarily plausible. I don't know if you're watching it right now.
No, I'm not. I found it on your page, so I will be watching it.
And I guess it's okay to mention it because it still makes this trailer's great regardless. It's. You know, these biotech firms discovered this drug that apparently will cure a lot of brain diseases. Hmm. And so they test it on the chimps, these apes, and it works with them. But the only negative they notice is that it's making them incredibly intelligent. It's making the apes smarter.
Oh.
And then therefore they get so smart they're able to break out of their confinement and organize.
This is the nightmare scenario with Bigfoot.
Yeah, it is. So, so hopefully it will be, you know,
a cautionary tale.
Exactly.
Cautionary tale.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. Well, Well, this was just a check-in, right? We're not doing a whole show.
That's true. What is it? How long have we been yakking? A half hour?
Half an hour. That's good. That's,
good. Fuck. Yeah.
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of anybody.
There was a dude, Paul and I touched on this a couple days ago. This dude, Thomas Gospel, I've brought him up now twice in two shows. He signed up for Facebook specifically so he could interact with us.
Thomas Gospel?
Yeah. So I wanted to bring up his question and see how you answered. He said, I would like to ask what exactly makes you guys believe. Of course, he says, I know Scott had his sighting. But aside from that. I mean, for you, I don't know, how can you see aside from that, right? For you.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, yeah, but I mean.
What was it before that?
Oh, no, I believed before. I, as I've said before about what happened in 92, it just...
But we could burn up three or 4 hours. Why don't you tell that story again?
Yeah, no. I just that it solidified the belief, solidified it more. You know, I still don't.
What's your earliest... I'll ask it to you this way. What's your earliest sort of memory of Bigfoot? How far back can you take this in your
Oh, I remember, you know, seeing the shows, like a lot of us who are generally my age. I'm 83.
Right.
So I saw that in my 40s, which, no. It's, you know, the late 60s shows, of course, the Patterson film stuff. But really, more specifically, the thing I remember that more than anything was my dad bought me a copy of John Green's The Year of the Sasquatch.
Yeah.
When he, I think, I can't remember if I was on a trip with him or he had been up there fishing somewhere in Canada and he bought, you know, the book for me. So, and I just remember how thinking as a kid, you know, how soberly written it was. It just wasn't sensationalized.
Yeah.
Just all these stories and stuff. And that got me into it thinking, yeah, there's probably something to this. And then, you know, the subsequent stories. And then, of course, what happened in 92. And then various people I've met over the years who have apparently, you know, had these firsthand encounters, which have been quite a few. And again, it goes back to what you were alluding to before or talking about, was that all of these people are lying or psychotic. Yeah. You know, it just seems
it's hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's interesting. You know, my earliest memory is also a John Green book, and it's if you are of a certain age, if you're 83 or younger, it seems like a lot of people our age or around our age, because we're not exactly the same age, but around our age, we're are sort of started that way. What do you think makes people, why does it take up so much of some people's sort of bandwidth, mental bandwidth? What is it about the people who get really into this subject? Why do they do that?
Because I think they're, in a lot of ways, there are so few bona fide mysteries that are out there. And it's something that, however remote the possibility of having a direct or even an indirect encounter, there is that possibility. So personally, I've just found it such an interesting thing over the years to sit and literally just contemplate as I'm driving through the woods, you know, thinking of techniques and what is it like, what action could I take as a researcher that would increase my probability of having an encounter if in fact these things are out there? And so I think that is just a neat thing. It's just part of the human nature, human curiosity to see if something like that is out there. And then when you couple in the quote unquote monster angle of Bigfoot, along with the evolutionary implication, something that would be probably our closest living relative, it just gives it layers that you don't find in a lot of other topics or mysteries. You know, it has a lot of, and then there's just the goofy aspect of it too, which I love as well. The kitschy aspect,
sort of the pop culture bit of it. Yeah.
Yeah. The beef jerky guy, the Sasquatch that stuff's awesome. So, and I think we're all into it because I think we take it seriously enough that literally in the back of our heads, or maybe even more fully in our consciousness, that there could be a solution any day, or it could go on for 50 years.
Right.
You know, there could be that elusive body part that's found, or a tooth, or what's going to be the next step of plausible discovery.
Eventually we'll cut down the last tree and there'll be 50 Bigfoot sighting behind it.
Yeah, that would be that would be pretty awesome, man.
I can't wait for that day. Yeah.
Yeah, that's going
to
be great.
You know, I think it's interesting about, I think that if you're really into this, there has to be, you have to have a bit of a anti-establishment kind of, I mean, you have to be able to look sort of common sense in the face and say, I think you're wrong, right? So because you really, if you're into this, and if you're into this for the right reason, if you're into it because you've you know, you've weighed the evidence or whatever. Not because you just wish and hope forever that there's fairies behind the tree or whatever, but you really want, you know, you've sort of balanced the evidence and you've come to the conclusion that yes, there's probably something there. You have to be able to sort of look, you know, common sense and what most people would consider to be normal in the face and say, no, I don't think you're right. You know, because, and that's not everyone has that. You know, not everyone is brave enough, I think. And not that, you know, we're incredibly brave people for,
we're very brave.
Yeah. But you know what?
We're the bravest of the brave.
Brave is the wrong word, but you know, there's
the joint.
But you have to have, you have to have a certain, I don't know, personality to be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, well, that's certainly part of it. I mean, I think there's,
that's why none of them get along. That's why, you know, nobody in Bigfoot gets along, because they're all a bunch of surly bastards who.
Well, yeah, they had like you know, Robert Michael Pyle said in his book, because like all the, when he went to the conferences, I just realized all these guys want to be Bigfoot, which I think was a tad generalized there, but there, I think there is some truth
to it.
That's
a good line, though. Yeah.
And you know, it's, you know, I think everybody wants to strive for uniqueness, and this obviously would be a pretty unique discovery, and you could be part of it and you read about it, and it's just a mystery. It's like getting, like, you know, like another you know, mystery I'm sure I've told you many times that I'm almost equally obsessed as Bigfoot is the Zodiac Killer mystery, which is a great mystery.
I don't remember ever talking about that with you.
Yeah, I don't, but it's awesome, and I recommend any, well, first of all, see the movie by David Fincher.
It's a good movie. I think it's great. Want to see it.
Great movie. It was never officially solved. The premise of this film is that the one of, if not the main suspect in the film, is believed by the author of the book that this, in fact, was the Zodiac Killer. But it was never, this guy actually ended up dying in the early 80s, but it was never proven. It had all this circumstantial evidence kind of pointing toward him, but the two hardest pieces of evidence did not. So it's a fascinating case, not only just as a mystery in and of itself, but I think as what is it, what do we really know? That is what it puts you up against. And I think you'll like this movie a lot because it's essentially a film about obsession. It's about three different characters, the newspaper writer, the book writer, which is played by Jake Gyllenhaal, Robert Downey Jr. plays the beat reporter, and Mark Ruffalo plays the cop, who are all obsessed with this case. And it went on for years.
Yeah.
You know, five people were murdered by this guy, and he sent 40 letters to you know, handwritten letters. And even with that, you know, in this day and age, you think that would be almost impossible. You'd get caught with the forensic technology now. But it was never conclusively nailed on this one guy, although I think it probably was him. But it's just a great movie, and there's great books on it, and I would recommend any books that get like 4 or 5 stars if you go to Amazon and check it out. But
that is part of the Bigfoot myth thing is that you're also talking about something that if it turns out to be true, and you and I think it is, but it's this thing that has been sitting in front of us literally since the time we showed up on this continent as Europeans, right? I mean, the Native Americans have stories. They know all about it. They don't need to be, you know, most of them who are still in touch with their culture don't need to be convinced. It's like, it's always been there.
Yeah.
People have always been seeing it. And for some reason we just pretend like it's not there.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with just that whole thing. When people get together, when humans get together and form little groups, religious, political, whatever, there tends to be a tendency for smugness and, you know, not rocking the boat. And we all know this, you know, we know what knowledge is. And I think that in the case of the Bigfoot phenomena, because like you said, you and I believe it to be true, is that it's kind of a humbling thing, is that we don't know, in a truly scientific sense, everything that exists on the earth. Most people would agree with that on like microscopic levels or even like astrological levels. But I think there's that tendency to think amongst a lot of people, and on the surface, it kind of makes sense, in the intermediate realm between the microcosm and the macrocosm, well, we know everything. We would know anything that was as big as a Bigfoot. We'd obviously have come in by now. Yeah, when you study the history of higher primates, though, and you realize that a lot of these forests in the Pacific Northwest and other parts of the country are just as or very close to the density of some of the quote-unquote wild places of the right. world. I think it's kind of that built – I think partly the puritanical culture of our country. We tend to think this is a very civilized, and you look at the map, and look, there's these lines, and there's the city, and we know everything, and we're not like the heathens who live over in Africa or anything where it's really jungly and everything. Well, you know what? I go to British Columbia.
I mean, I've been in the Ouachitas in Oklahoma. That is a deciduous jungle, right? I mean, that is a jungle. The big thicket in Texas is worse. You know, northern Minnesota, you know, there's not a lot of encounter reports in northern Minnesota, but there are just north of that in Canada. And that is some dense, thick stuff. I mean, it is a jungle. It's a pine tree jungle, but it's still a jungle.
Yeah. And then on that note, as far as down here during my hike, I would say, though, the majority of the forest I've been going through, it's very interesting. When you look at it from like a highway going by, it looks incredibly dense because they call the AT the green tunnel because a lot of it is shaded because there is all the, you know, deciduous trees. But especially in the early part before spring sprung, there's not a lot of places you see that you would, something like a Sasquatch could, I think, convincingly hide. There's not a lot of undergrowth, I think primarily because all that sun isn't getting to the ground. So as opposed to areas that I've been to in the Pacific Northwest, because I'll be honest, I am not fully convinced of the southeastern Sasquatch. I'm not even really that. I'm in that, you know, you have skeptics who say, well, there's stories from all over, therefore if Bigfoot really must be all that's horrible logic. That doesn't make any sense. Why couldn't some of the stories be true and some of them be false? In fact, that's probably what the case is. So but I have noticed this, and it's always on my mind because I remember, I think it was Byrne mentioned in his book or talked about once that there was someone had theorized that they think that there might be a connection between Yetis, Sasquatches, and rhododendron, that they might like rhododendron for some reason. Actually, the thing that happened to me, the ground foliage was largely rhododendron where this the nesting was, and there is tons of rhododendron down here. But that's about all there is as far as any kind of dense. You know, there's not like there are areas like in the Smokies. You look down in some canyons and you go, okay, yeah, if there was a large primate, he could hide in there pretty easily. But majority of the stuff, at least what the trail goes through, I don't know. I'm not like, oh yeah, you could hide big feet here, you know, or gorillas could hide in here, as opposed to being in areas of the, you know, northwest California, parts of Oregon and Washington and British Columbia. It seems more geographically likely to be able to conceal animals like that.
So speaking, you just said big feet.
Oh yes.
So
did I didn't mean to. I like to say
you did.
Yeah.
So it looks like Paul posted on our Bigfoot Show page on Facebook, facebook.com/TheBigfootShow. Yeah. He's criticizing Matt Moneymaker for saying Bigfoots. What is, in your opinion, the proper plural?
Sasquattle. I like to take credit for that.
I love Sasquattle. I use it all the time.
Yeah, Bigfoot sounds goofy.
Bigfoot sounds stupid. So does Big Feet. Yeah.
Big Feet sounds bad. I don't know. Honestly, I mean, Sasquattle to me, you know, it is made up, but at one point every word's been made up. I that would be my favorite. But Bigfoot isn't going to, you know, especially if you're dealing with a skeptic. The Bigfoots are out there in group. Bias, you know, it's not going to help.
Yeah,
good English would be a good starting point.
All right, so how much longer do you have on this thing? on this hike?
On the trail.
Before we can get back to a regularly scheduled Bigfoot show.
Well, I think we could. I'm scheduled to be out here, man, for September, another 4 months.
Good God. All right. That's a long time. Hello?
I know. It's a long time. Awesome. The people are awesome. And it's wild and wacky, man.
Uh-oh.
And the chat I control. No. No, it's just such a different thing from non-trail life. I mean, not super. We're all, you know, it's all basically the same, but it's just different, and it's a lot of fun. And you know, again, I plan to be out here at least until mid-October, whether I'm injured or not. I mean, I want to keep hiking as much as possible. I'm really looking forward to getting up to New England and hiking in the whites of New Hampshire and Maine. And
where does the trail end?
The trail ends at Mount Katahdin in Maine.
So you've got to get up. I mean, when does it start snowing up there?
Well, what they close it. They close Katahdin, the park, October 15th.
Oh.
Hell or high water, they close it. Now, one thing I'm considering is flipping up there and then coming southbound. I'm not doing a linear hike like everybody else does.
Oh, I'm going to point out in our last show, Paul actually said you're not doing it correctly because you're not doing it all in one fell swoop.
Breaking
it up and, you know, so on. Basically, he's giving you. I want you guys to get in a fight because
help ratings. Paul's a good, reasonable man for a Brit. And, that's why I did, you know, I did the PCT in sections. And the reason that my main way of doing this is doing southbound chunks so that I run into the northbounders because it's primarily done in a northbound direction. The film is primarily about the people that I run into. I would say roughly it's about 75% or 2/3 of the film is about the people I run into. And the rest of the film will be about my own hike. I just think it would be incredibly boring because I've seen film that's just all about the person doing the hike. That's been done. But when I think you do it in kind of a collage format, we've got bits of stories from all these different people. To me, that worked well with the Pacific Crest Trail films. And so far, like I mentioned before, I'm happy with the footage I've shot so far. And I think there will be a good film in there. Hopefully I won't muck it up in the editing process. So these southbound chunks flipping up, southbound chunk, flip up. The bad news with that is that it does chew up time with the flipping, you know, because I've got my car out here and trying to work out some kind of shuttle and all that. And
so what do you, I mean, I'm confused about the car, just like the mechanics of this. You park, you hike, and what do you hike back to the car?
Yeah. Well, no, what happened, like, for example, when I did the PCT films, I met a lot of people who live out on the East Coast who are AT hikers who have done the PCT. So I've had people help me out. Like, for example, I stayed in Waynesboro, which is north of Daleville, Virginia. I'm in Daleville, Virginia right now. And I was in Waynesboro. And I left my car there and I started hiking south. Well, 60 miles short of Daleville, Hippie Longstockings, a longtime friend who was in the area, she kind of kidnapped me with her friend. They were on this Thelma and Louise road trip. And who was I to refuse their kidnapping attempt?
Oh, sure.
Uh-huh. And so I got to pick up that section. So they just drove me back to Waynesboro where my car was waiting at the inappropriately named Quality Inn. and so then I drove it back down here to Daleville because I've got to head south to go pick up a chunk I missed between Irwin, Tennessee and Damascus, Virginia. So there's a lot of things picking up the little bits here and there. And
it's a logistical nightmare.
It's not a nightmare. It's actually kind of fun figuring it all out. But it's because if you just did the typical south to north hike, you'd basically be in a bubble the whole time. You'd probably see the same 30 hikers.
Right.
And, you know, there's been a lot of films like that. So the way I did the PCT films, I think, is pretty unique. And so I just wanted to apply that style in this film basically as well.
So now you're throwing that down to Paul. Now he has to respond basically to
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Does Paul actually know where the United States are on a globe?
He knows he gets on a plane, and then about 8 hours later he gets off and he's there. I think that's all he knows.
The start.
It's the British education system. I don't think it's all that good. Yeah.
It's really a little overrated.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for catching up. We'll probably just keep doing it this way. You know, we'll pull a show when we can. When you're in a spot where you're hanging out, we'll give you a call. And
well, I'll tell you, I can tell you right now, actually, a possible if you guys think there's enough for another show coming up. It's actually going to be in about 2.5 weeks. I'm going to be in fabulous Duncannon, Pennsylvania, July 8th, 9th, and 10th.
Okay.
There's going to be a big hiker feed at the – there's a famous decrepit old hotel there called the Doyle, which looks like the Munsters run it.
Cool.
And so –
uh-oh, we lost you.
I'm going to be there. So July 8th, 9th, and 10th, maybe too soon.
Yeah, but I'm going to actually – I'm going to be in Washington. I'm going to be camping in the Olympics the 8th, 9th, and 10th. Are you there?
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Okay. Right. It sounded like either that or you interrupted yourself and just stopped talking. I could.
I do that all the time. Shut up, you. All right. No, I'm going to be actually in the woods at the 8th, 9th, and 10th. We're going to be going to the Olympic Peninsula.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
So, first time there?
First time I've always wanted to go. I've never been there. I've been to Washington like several times, but never to the Olympics.
I hope you're going to the Ho Rainforest.
We will. We're not camping there because it's a bloody, there's a lot of people in there. So we're actually elsewhere, but we're definitely going to hit the Ho Rainforest before it's all said and done. Yeah.
It's, and I think you'll be saddened actually when you go on the 101. You'll see, especially around the town of Forks, you'll see a lot of clear cut. It's kind of sad.
Yeah. Yeah, you kind of see it on the map, right? On Google, you can see.
Yeah.
You can actually see the boundaries of the national park clearly via satellite because there's like deep, dark green and then this patchwork of other kind of green. Yeah.
But I'll tell you, that is, the Olympic Peninsula, man, that is, the other really kind of credible, skeptical Bigfoot book that was written before, Daigling's book. The one thing that guy admitted, he goes, well, I'll tell you, the Olympic National Park could be a place where something like these things could exist. That's what he said, which I think they could exist in a lot of other places in the Northwest. But it is, they get so much rain there. There's so much vegetation that, something big and smart could hide in there pretty easily.
Yeah. Well, so we'll probably hook up after that. We'll mid-July. We'll
check in.
Maybe we'll check in. We'll just play it by ear, and all of our, five or six fans will just have to, be patient.
Well, I want you to know, I know of at least two hikers who have downloaded. In fact, I know one hiker who's downloaded every episode.
No kidding.
Moxie is her name. Yes.
Hey, Moxie, how you doing?
And she said she's listened, and she. Especially like the one where I urinated into a cup.
So you're telling me she's heard more of these shows than you have?
Probably. I lived them.
Yeah, but you don't listen to the ones that you're not on.
Well, I got stuff to do. I got to try to stay conscious. Okay. So, but it was good. I'm glad you called, man. It was good to...
It was good.
You're not even going to run this, are you? It's just you're just kind of doing this to appease me. And
I'm not even recording it, no.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's right. Well, it felt good. It was a good run through. And
think of it like what do you call that in theater when you practice first? It's a rehearsal.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Great.
You boys and girls won't object to Grove's emulsified nose drops. There's nothing unpleasant about them. They don't run out of your nose and make you messy. They don't run down the back of your throat and make you sickish. What's more, they don't burn or sting the inside of your nose. They quickly check a head cold and yet do it in a nice way. These nose drops are something brand new and a big improvement on old-fashioned oil drops. Mother is interested in getting results when you have a cold in the head, and she'll get results much faster with Grove's emulsified nose drops. In every section of the country, Grove's emulsified nose drops are selling at an amazing rate. That's because they are better in every way. Tell Mother to procure a bottle at the corner drugstore.